It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the things I enjoy most about doing this show is doing live interviews on a regular basis with the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, who joins us monthly on the program. Today, he is with me in studio for his first visit of the year. Mayor Peduto, Happy New Year. Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
One of the things. One. Okay. Yeah. I'll remember this.
Well, there are other things I enjoy. This is my favorite thing, though.
There you go. All right. Hey, Happy New Year, Paul. How have you been?
I've been well. Good. Thank you. Are you all plugged in over there?
Yes, I am. I can hear in both ears.
Good. That's a good thing.
It's better than the cold I had over Christmas.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I was one of those people. It was a migratory cold. It would go from like the ears to the throat to the chest, back to the ears to the chest. I guess the bourbon wasn't helping to get rid of it.
Well, you seem to be well enough now, so that's
feeling
a good,
good
thing. And you survived Cincinnati. You were at the game.
I have a T-shirt that says that.
You should.
Yeah, it's Bengal print, orange and black. By the way, the mayor, John Cranley, who's a really great guy of Cincinnati, will be serving the homeless in Cincinnati wearing a Troy Polamalu uniform. It was a little too much to ask to have an active member of the Steelers after that game, but everyone loves Troy, right?
Yeah, well,
except people in Cincinnati.
Will the mayor wear a wig?
I should have found one and sent one as well, but I couldn't find one. I'll be at Light of Life this evening, keeping out our side, even though we won, and with County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, and we'll be serving a great meal of food that will be coming in from Cincinnati and some stuff from Pittsburgh to our homeless on a cold night.
A perfect scenario.
Thank you very much.
You
get the game ball for that.
Exactly. All right, I'll take it. And are you doing anything with the mayor of Denver? Any kind of thing in the works for this weekend's game?
We got a snowplow on the line.
Snowplow.
Yeah. Couple tons of salt. Haven't reached out yet. And Mayor Hancock and I know each other pretty well. We used the same media consultant. You remember when I was riding around in Street Sweeper, and the guy that did that also did some great ads for him, and so talked to him before I hired them, but very involved in education, and I just ended the chairmanship of Youth, Education, and Families with the National League of Cities. So if we can put together something in the next few days that would be able to provide books to our little ones and come up with a sponsor who would be willing to pay for that, I think I could get him on the line to be able to wager up whether old man Manning still has it in him to win a game.
Yeah, we'll see. Meanwhile, you guys in the booth, go ahead and see if you can get a hold of Mayor of Denver, and and then we'll
Mayor Hancock.
Yeah, Mayor Hancock's office on the line. Well, yesterday you introduced a new public safety director, and Mr. Hisrick. Mm-hmm. Is taking over. What makes you believe he's the right man for this position?
Very good question. So we had a very good public safety director in Stephen Bukar. And Steve had a very strict black and white, where integrity was everything, approach to public safety. It came from his training as a Pennsylvania State Trooper and the FBI. And that's exactly what we needed, because when we said we were going to come in to reform each of the bureaus and be able to bring integrity back into them, I needed somebody who was going to lead by that type of an example. And for 2 years, that's what we did. And we set the structure and the foundation to where now we can start to see a change in the procedures and the policies. Call in Wendell. And by the way, Steve was raised on a street in Washington County where the guy down the street was a state trooper. It's where his interest in law enforcement came from. It's where his first love was. And he made it clear to both me and Chief Ackland that he wanted to go back to the state police. And so we were supportive of him doing that. Now we have a new director, Director Hisrick. And he comes from a different background. His background was very young in age, volunteer firefighter out of Forest Hills, Duquesne University graduate. Has stayed a part of that volunteer fire unit for 40-some years, worked his way up through Pittsburgh EMS, becoming a crew chief, joining the FBI, 25 years in the FBI in law enforcement, heading up operations on weapons of mass destruction, setting up the emergency preparations, most recently for the Pope's visit to Philadelphia. understanding of both internal crimes, white collar and government corruption, and also drug and violent crimes in Ohio and California, and sort of brings together fire, EMS, and law enforcement and how joint operations can prepare us, and that's really the key, for both man-made and natural disasters. And so we have a new focus now within public safety of joint operations and community outreach. And working with him over the course of this next week to restructure that department to be able to reach the capacity for both.
Speaking of community outreach, as of this week, Pittsburgh is the first city in the U.S. to have a crossing guard monitoring program. Explain what this is.
Mentoring program.
Excuse me.
The crossing guards program. All of a sudden are like, monitoring us? That's why you're giving us
this
new
radio. They already
monitor.
Now they're going to mentor.
Yeah. So what's the first line of uniformed officer that a child encounters? Unless it's a crisis, unless it's a fire, a medical emergency, or violent crime, it is that school crossing guard. And that school crossing guard has the ability at a very young age to build a line of communication and trust with a young person. So instead of just waving and saying it's safe to cross the street, hey, did you get that homework done last night? So how was your day? Oh, I see you're crying. What's in understanding and being taught what the different signs are when that child's walking to school and crying or leaving school and crying, or just building up the trust and getting to know them and letting them know who they are too. It makes it a lot easier years later when that child is working and dealing with a police officer. It also can lend itself into a line of workforce development that we're now creating out in Homewood at Westinghouse High School and creating an academy for public safety services and actually starting to get kids involved at 10th grade to become police officers, firefighters, medics. And it's the only place in the country that's doing it. We have been working so much with our crossing guards. You may see them now at Steeler games. They're definitely there for our different big events in the convention center and the arts festival. And now we're getting them involved with our kids instead of just crossing the street to help to mentor them into a better life.
The year began on a good note for your administration with the Commonwealth Court of Pennsylvania ruling in favor of the city's contention that affirms the rule that police officers be Pittsburgh residents. Why is this decision important?
Well, it also started off on a good note with the old Sidney Crosby returning to the ice. As somebody said, that was a good trade, the old Sid back for the Sid that was playing first half. The ruling, and I'm not sure, but I'm assuming that the FOP is going to appeal it to the Supreme Court. They certainly have made every indication of that, so it's something that I have can only speak partly of. But there is a home rule charter, and the home rule charter is not the city code. It's not the laws of ordinances of how we operate city government. It is our constitution. It is adopted and approved by the people, and it is how the city must operate. The FOP went to state legislators from suburban areas that don't even represent the city of Pittsburgh, and they got them to change a law that said that city police officers may live instead of shall live within the city. And through backroom deal, they were able to get that passed. That then led to a lot of opposition and a lot of divisiveness within the community. So a bill was put up which allowed the people of Pittsburgh to have their voice in this discussion, not just suburban legislators who don't represent the city of Pittsburgh. People voted overwhelmingly. Over 80% of the people said they want all city employees, not just police, city planners, parks and rec employees, the people that work in finance and in personnel, and city police to live in the city of Pittsburgh. So the FOP, an arbitrator, gave the FOP the ability to move out, which they didn't have the ability to do, or at least we thought so. And we took it to court, and upon appeal, we won. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that police officers must live in the city. While they go through that appeal process, we'll be looking at what our rights are. Now, we can't give them and say, here, you can go ahead. Don't worry about it. You can live outside the city, because the people of Pittsburgh have already made that part of our Home Rule Charter. And I can't give that away. However, we can negotiate and we can talk about what an amnesty program would be looking like to move back into the city of Pittsburgh, how much time they would be given in order to be able to do so, and what the city of Pittsburgh's residents would want for that. That's what collective bargaining is. Collective bargaining isn't about going to Harrisburg and doing a backroom deal in order to get something against the wishes of the people that you are serving. It's sitting at that table and giving and getting. And I respect the collective bargaining process. We wouldn't even be in this position if the deal had not been made. There would never have been a change to the Home Rule Charter. And we'd be having a much different conversation. I think the FOP was given some really bad advice on how to approach this. And what I can do is try and take the level of concern from officers who were told during that process to move out of the city and their wives and their family, that I'm not just going to fire them all tomorrow. I'm not going to do that. I could. I'm not. But at the same time, the FOP has to ratchet it down a few pegs and be willing to negotiate and work with us and the people of Pittsburgh and not try and do these deals in Harrisburg.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and our guest today is Mayor Bill Peduto, who is making the first of his regular visits to the program here in 2016. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. And let's go to Tim in Swickley. Hi, Tim. You're on Essential Pittsburgh with Mayor Peduto.
Good day, gentlemen. I appreciate the privilege. Mr. Mayor, I wonder if you would describe your experiences at the climate conference in Paris and whether or not it had an effect of your understanding of the severity of the threats from climate change and ocean acidification. And I appreciate you making that trip. It's nice to see somebody do something like that. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Tim. 1992, Rio de Janeiro, it awoke me to the issue of climate change and of the work that needed to be done. And I still have a poster from that conference hanging in the mayor's office. At that time, the representative for the United States was Al Gore to that conference. At that time, felt that the only way that the issue could be addressed was by nations working together in order to resolve big issues. I've now believed that the way that it will be addressed is by cities and regions working together to resolve big issues, and that the solutions really are more at hand at a local level than they are at a national or international level, and that cities and regions are now working together on exactly that level. I think the big takeaway for me, Tim, was that understanding, sitting in a room of mayors from 500 different cities of every continent on Earth, and all speaking in the same language, and understanding that the policies that we can implement on a local level on how we build structures, transportation, infrastructure can lessen the need for energy, and that the options of different types of energy, be it direct energy, renewable energy, or different sources that are outside of the 19th century way of doing things, will have a dramatic effect on both the need and the way that it's developed of providing energy. And that as cities, we have more of a say than other areas because of the growing population that is moving into the cities. Majority of the world now lives in cities. In the next decade, it's going to be over 60%, and it's only going to increase more. And that's really where it needs to come from. On a small scale, working one-on-one with a dozen other elected officials from the United States, and I was very honored to be asked to be a part of this and to be a part of this leadership circle. On a much grander scale, not simply working with the other mayors from around the world who I had the opportunity to talk a lot with, and also talk to the people who were doing the negotiations for the United States, but the NGOs that were there, the non-government entities that are really steering it, foundations from around the world, environmental and economic agencies. I spoke a lot with the World Bank that is now looking at where they can do investment to see where this change in economics, basically, this new industry, what cities are going to be leaders in it. And with this new partnership we've created with the Department of Energy, I think we're going to see investment coming from Washington and potentially from other places around the world, is places like the University of Pittsburgh, NRG, Peoples Gas, Duquesne Light, start to put together a new plan of direct energy, basically providing energy locally instead of having it shipped hundreds of miles from a power plant the way we've been doing for over 100 years. So it was both on a micro and a macro, very compelling, and it gave me reassurance and faith that solutions can be found if we start looking at the local level.
I wanted to talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal that the Obama administration is pushing. You agree with President Obama on a number of issues, but not this one.
Yeah.
Why not?
And I've actually spoke directly at the White House with this on two occasions. I think the first occasion was, does he really mean it? And the second occasion, I pretty much made it clear that I'm not going to be with him on this one.
You know, the president thinks you're wrong, by the way.
Yeah. And for the reasons that I believe that I am trying to help on issues of being able to raise wages for people around the world, being able to make the United States more competitive in the way that we export, and also on protecting the environment on a worldwide basis. However, I I'm not a protectionist. I would not put myself in that category. And in 1992, I was somebody who thought NAFTA was a really good idea just for those exact reasons. But in every trade agreement, including that one, we've seen throughout Western Pennsylvania our manufacturing base become less and less competitive. And in fact, not only that, but countries like China being able to dump products like steel to the point now where our steel industry is barely surviving. And I do believe that if this trade agreement goes in, that will be the last nail in the coffin to not only the steel industry, but other industries in heavy manufacturing that are in a similar position.
Now, some Pittsburgh companies, such as PPG Industries, stand to gain from eliminating, reducing tariffs, faster customs processing, increased access to global markets. They're for this. So how do you balance their interests with those of the workers, the members of the Steelworkers Union, and that kind of thing?
Well, it's not only the Steelworkers Union, it's U.S. Steel. I mean, the opposition is pretty solidified between both corporate and labor on this. It's other industries as well throughout Western Pennsylvania. It's the Sierra Club. It's the Green Blue Alliance that was born here in the city of Pittsburgh in 2007 between environmental and labor that is basically the ones that would lose. Wall Street would definitely benefit, and I think that that's where a lot of this is coming from. But to date, I haven't seen a trade agreement that is under this form, which is very similar form that what we've seen since the early 1990s, that's benefited Western Pennsylvania. So I don't have an answer for you where I could say this would be a trade agreement that I could support. I simply know that this one is far too similar to the ones in the past that have taken a toll on this region.
Mayor Peduto is our guest here on Essential Pittsburgh. We need to work in a break. We'll come back. We'll take some more calls and visit with the mayor some more here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're spending a good part of the program today visiting with the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. We'll get to some calls here in a moment. But, Mayor, I wanted to talk about your push for the use of Section 8 money to subsidize home ownership. Explain why you're doing this, and could it be because affordable housing is becoming more and more scarce in this town due to gentrification?
Yeah, so affordable housing is becoming more and more scarce in every city in the world. Every city in the world, not just the United States. It's not just Boston and San Francisco and Seattle. It's every city in the world. Affordable housing is one of those buzzwords when you talk to mayors from around the world that they talk about, because people are moving into cities at a record pace. And it's the old supply-demand type model that gets approached. Pittsburgh still has one of the most affordable markets in the country. And you can still get places for $300, $400 a month rent. You can still buy places for $60,000, $70,000. Can't even get close to that in other cities. So we aren't where others are. We can learn from the mistakes they had and create a different way to do it, but we're not going to be able to do it with the tools we have. That's why people haven't been able to succeed. So when I got that lift from the president from the airport to the convention center with Fitz, the thing I brought up to him was, look, I got 7,000 people that need affordable housing that I don't have housing available for. I got 13,000 vacant properties, lots, and abandoned buildings. I need to wed the two together. And he went through, and I was shocked. You
know, what did he think of it?
First off, he said, well, under HUD, you can, and he mentioned a specific program. We had already looked at that. We're like, that would only apply if an out-of-state developer or a big developer locally, and then you end up with the apartment building, which is a warehouse of poverty. I said, I want to fix those buildings, not demolish them to build something. He goes, well, what about, that won't apply if you work with a nonprofit or a faith-based institution. What we want to do is work with the groups that are in the neighborhoods or on the front lines and give them this resource to do it. We're not going to do it, but we don't want to be relying upon big developers to do it either. So what if you have a faith-based institution, a church, that wants to take five houses around the church, hire people from the neighborhood, teach them how to do plumbing and electrical and roofing, use it as almost like a classroom, restore those homes, and then use the equity that is the voucher to be able to do that. And then the remainder would be paid on a monthly basis by the person, but that owned the property. And he's there like, okay. By the end of that day, we got a call back from HUD and from the White House saying, send us the proposal tomorrow. I met twice with Secretary Castro on this. We want to be the pilot to be able to do it. We want to go into neighborhoods like the Hill District and Homewood and up on the Hilltop and be able to save these beautiful Queen Anne's and Victorians and turn them into home ownership opportunities. And the only way that it works, and the only reason that Pittsburgh is one of the few cities that would work, is because our property values are still so low that we can get them for $5,000 or $10,000, or we can give them for free and be able to make the metrics and the mathematics of it work.
And we're also this older city that has this stock of, as you mentioned, Victorian-era homes that if you were ever able to restore them would be amazing.
Right, and you look around and you see what we did before. You know, there's a lot of talk about East Liberty, and it's like, well, look at all the new people that are coming in. And it's a mix. It's a mix between low income, and we've been building a lot of affordable housing in East Liberty, and high income. And that is good. That's not bad. What we did before is we put all low income into one neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we built these big apartment buildings where all low income was. And we saw people leave. We saw middle class leave. We saw businesses leave. And we saw crime go up. And we're not going to make that same mistake again. We're not going to encapsulate poverty into one area. We're going to make it mixed. And if we can make it mixed and also make it a mix between rent and own, when that neighborhood comes back and that person owns that property, they don't get displaced. In fact, if they want to leave, they get rich because now they're able to sell
right.
that property.
Property value is going up.
Property value is going up. So we want to be able to make that an option as we redevelop neighborhoods that have seen no development for 50 years. People talk about people leaving neighborhoods like East Liberty and Homewood. We lost 80% of the people, not because of investment, but because of disinvestment. It has had a greater effect than what we're seeing now. In fact, it's starting to stabilize the population of low-income families in these neighborhoods because investment's finally starting to happen. But we have to be very delicate on how we deal with it to make sure that the future growth sees a proportionate growth of low-income with market rate. And that is what we're trying to do with this program, while training people to be able to get jobs and building
which
trades.
Is a really interesting component. It's kind of like your alter ego, Ed, how he learned to
right.
install that
Except
door.
These people have skills. And the other part of it, too, is we will work directly with the nonprofits and the faith-based institutions that have been there struggling on the ground for so long and being able to give them an opportunity to do it. And the housing authority then breaks away from this idea that the only thing we develop are big warehouses of poverty. We start getting down to the single-family home.
Let's take a call from Ann in Friendship. Ann, you're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is, what is happening with the relocation assistance that the city had said that they would give to the Penn Plaza residents? And where are they finding homes?
Yeah. So there was a deadline for the first phase of about 100 units by March. And we're, I think, about halfway there. About 50 people have been relocated, some within East Liberty, some, my receptionist, who actually is a Penn Plaza resident, she moved to the north side to one of the new Pharos properties, which is, she absolutely loves it. It's a much nicer property and very close to downtown where she works. But it is, we still have about another 50 to do. The part of the agreement was that the developer had to hire a professional relocation service and also provide assistance to people to be able to make that move. And I think we'll be able to get to our goal. We're also doing a preference program for people as we build out Mellon Orchard, which will also be a mixed-use, affordable housing development that they'll get first right of refusal as that starts to get built too. So if somebody like Linda in my office wanted to move back, she would have that opportunity. But I think she's pretty happy and is going to stay.
Thank you, Ann, for the call. Mayor, this year the city of Pittsburgh is celebrating its 200th anniversary. What is in store for residents of the city as we celebrate that?
First off, a history lesson, because everyone goes, wait a second, we just celebrated 250. How can it be 200? So 250 celebrates...
happened in 1816?
Let me go back to 1758.
Okay.
So that was when the French blew up Fort Duquesne and the British took it over and said, we'll name it after the Earl of Chatham, the Prime Minister of England, William Pitt. So that was that, what we just celebrated with 250. But in 1816, the township, township, then a borough, and then the city lobbied to become a city.
So they could have a mayor like you.
Exactly. And who did they select as mayor? Ebenezer Denny, who fought at the Battle of Yorktown.
And the Revolutionary War.
Cornwallis surrenders. George Washington, that famous painting where Washington's on his horse and Cornwallis is surrendering. If you look down the line of the officers of the United States Army, the Revolutionary Army, the Revolutionary Army.
Yeah, the guy's fighting the British.
The blue, right.
Denny's in that line?
He's in that line. He's holding the United States flag. Washington had him hold it. He was a 19-year-old major, and that became the first mayor in 1816, and a city was born. And in 1816, the state gave us the right to become a state, or a city. It would be nice to be a state, by the way.
Well, then in 1916, they had that for the 100th year anniversary. They had one heck of a celebration.
They sure did.
We gonna have anything like that this year?
No, they had money. So Mary Armstrong's building, Henry Hornbostel designed buildings and beautiful, architecture inside and out of a classic design stands. City County building, and they did a bunch of other things too. For this celebration, what we're going to do is we're asking the people to be the celebration. We're asking the organizations that are all throughout the city to be a part of it. And we have 300 so far that have signed up. And if you want to be a part of it, very simple, pgh200@pittsburghpa.gov. pgh200@pittsburghpa.gov.
We can link to that on our website.
Link to that, please. And what we're doing is we're celebrating it along with the Great Race and the Marathon and Little Italy Days and all the different events all throughout the city and smaller events with Little League teams and community-based organizations and individuals that throw their own block parties. And we're inviting everyone to be a part of it, because so many times in Pittsburgh, we won't feel like we're invited, or we won't cross that river, across that bridge. This is your excuse. Now you get the all access backstage pass to Pittsburgh to go to all these different things. If it's on that list, you're invited. And then we're going to take four big events. The in March, when the city was recognized, in July, when we actually became the city and Ebenezer Denny became the mayor, Light Up Night, when we're going to have the National League of Cities here and celebrating with 4,000 city leaders from around the country, and then First Night as we end that year and begin the next 200 years. So there will be big events and concerts and parades and all that good stuff around those four events, but there will be 300 more events, almost like a reason to party every day.
Oh, I like that.
Yes.
I think we all like that.
Yes.
You know, there aren't many mayors named Ebenezer these days.
Ebenezer Denny, I always thought would be a great name for a schnauzer. Don't you think?
Sure. Why not?
Yes.
There he comes, right through the door. This is radio. It's mm-hmm. theater of the mind. Anything
Good
could
boy.
Be happening. There
That's
you go.
Right.
Sit.
Yep.
Okay. He'll get his snack when we go to break. Well, you know, we don't have Mayor Ebenezer's, but we have Mayor Bill's, and we're sure glad to have you. We're so glad that you come and visit us on a regular basis, and we'll look forward to many more of these throughout this year of this historic year of 2016, the 200th anniversary of the city of Pittsburgh. Thank you so much, Mayor Peduto. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Go Steelers.
Go Steelers.
Coming up, so you've won the lottery. Now what? We'll look at what comes next. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.